Hello, NAFI members and flight instructors. John Niehaus, Director of Program Development for the National Association of Flight Instructors, welcoming you back to another episode of the NAFI More Right Rudder Podcast, the podcast for flight instructors on the go. And I'm very pleased to tell you that this episode is sponsored and brought to you by Avemco Insurance Company. Now, Avemco has been a friend of NAFI and a supporter of NAFI for a really, really long time. And they've been providing the best CFI liability insurance on the market to our instructors ever since the beginning. When we first started, Avemco came to us and said, hey, if we created the best CFI insurance for NAFI members, what would it look like? What do you think it would include? And we essentially came up with a list of things that we thought were really important, and Avemco went with all of them. So if you look at the NAFI insurance plan by Avemco, you will see that it is the most comprehensive plan on the market, and they're just such an amazing company, and the people that work there are incredibly professional, incredibly friendly, and just a delight to talk to. So I think you'll find that it's just a really great opportunity to protect yourself and protect all the things that that keep you operating as a flight instructor. So you've got nothing to lose by taking a look at it. If you want more information on the Avemco insurance plan, you can go to our website, which is nafinet.org/insurance. And from there, you can get some information. You can get a quote from Avemco. It even has a special phone number for you to call them if you're interested. It is required to be a NAFI member to take advantage of this plan. But we got you covered there, too. If you enter in a discount code of POD49, Papa Oscar Delta 49, you can get a $10 discount on either a brand new membership or even if you're renewing as a member. So remember, POD49, and then you can call Avemco and get the best plan out there for CFIs. So with that said, please remember, if you don't follow us on social media, if you don't subscribe to the podcast, we'd really, really like it if you did. The more followers, the more people that that connect with us on those platforms, the better off we are. So, and hopefully, the more information you'll get that you find interesting and maybe even help you become an even better CFI than you already are. So thank you so much for all of those that do. And those of you that don't, please find us. Now, today's podcast is actually an old Mentor Live, and it was hosted or presented by one of our NAFI board members, Aaron Dabney. Now, Aaron Dabney owns a flight school, Waco Flight Training, down in Waco, Texas. And he's been a master CFI for years and years and years. Good friend of mine, Aaron Dabney. He's been on the board for, well, I'm not even going to speculate. I know he's been there for a few years, but he's done so much for this organization and so much for our members. And this is such a wonderful presentation. It's teaching with purpose. I'm not going to go through all of the bullet points of this presentation. I think you can find that out when we start listening to it. But it's just it's something that some of us forget. Some of us never learned. Why do we do what we do, and why is it important to do it with purpose? So, without further ado, Mentor Live with Aaron Dabney, teaching with purpose.
He's been a professional CFI since 2009. He is a flight school owner in Texas. He's also an adjunct lecturer, an assistant chief ground instructor at Baylor University, a four-time NAFI master CFI. And with that, he's got a master's degree in education. He really knows his stuff about teaching. 4,500 hours of dual instruction given and over 100 practical test sign-offs. So I'm really excited to be here with Aaron. I think you're going to get a lot out of this program tonight. So without further ado, I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Aaron Dabney from Texas. And Aaron, thanks for joining us tonight. And you have the control and the presentation.
I have the controls. Thank you, Tom. Thanks so much. And really cool to be here with you tonight. And really interesting to be on the other side of the microphone. I've been the host a few times, so I'm pretty excited about getting to get the content tonight. So yeah, again, welcome to everybody. And trust me, if you're not a new CFI, this presentation is for you also. I really want everyone to find something they can take away, whether it's tips and tricks as a new CFI, or maybe some things that you can do to help mentor newer CFIs. I think we're at, maybe unprecedented is too big of a word, but we're at a really notable time in our industry because there are so many new people getting into instruction. And so this is a super important topic to me, near and dear to my heart. And I'm going to go ahead and jump into it. The line there on the first slide, that's something I say a lot. I would like to have my first few students back for a do-over. And I think that if most of us are honest, we would say that. One way that I've heard our business characterized, this is a little bit cynical, but we take the least experienced people who are the least inclined to be teachers and we hang the entire industry on them. That's a little bit cynical, but it can also be said to be accurate. If that makes it sound like we should just write off new instructors, I don't think it has to be that way. We can steepen the learning curve, but we're going to have to get beyond the books, beyond the jargon, and realize this is not really a flying job as much as a teaching job. When we get beyond all the jargon, we're teachers. A good teacher understands that the planning and delivery just as important as the content, that it's more about the delivery than the material sometimes, and they're passionate about being a teacher and transmitting the material. And if you think about it, a good teacher is a leader, a good teacher is a great communicator, and a good teacher can take the complex and make it simple. And if that sounds like things that we can all use in aviation careers beyond that flight instructor stuff, I agree with you. That's where I am with that. I'm not going to be able to go nearly as deep here as I'd like to. I think the hour's going to go by pretty quickly. I'm long-winded, and I have an idea that Tom and I are going to have a lot of fun together, so I'm kind of excited about that. And trust me, I realize that there are probably people on this broadcast whose intelligence I'm going to insult. You know, I've been at this for 10 years, and I know we've got members at this for 30 and 40 years. But hopefully you can take away one or two little things from this. This is my lessons learned from 12 years of doing this professionally, and I'll continue to learn lessons. I also want to say this is neither a replacement for the FOI material found in the Aviation Instructor's Handbook. As a matter of fact, it's highly influenced by it. The thing about the FOI stuff is it's really good stuff if you use it. You know, we tend to want to zip through that and get to the important stuff, right? But the FOI is pretty darn important. It's also not an indictment of it. The FOI is really good material. So don't take either of those things. This is just a little bit more of maybe a plain language look at how to execute some of that stuff. So really hope you get something out of this.
Yeah, Aaron, and I love what you said there, because it's that fundamentals. And I know when I teach flight instructors or, you know, initial candidates or whatever, is you'll see all these kind of things that are in the FOI really come through. And I love that focus on purpose, whether it's a steep turn, slow flight, or even if you're doing multi-engine instruction. So I think that's a good foundational discussion to
Absolutely.
Have.
It's amazing, isn't it? How much stuff that you look back on and you're like, I think I read about that, right?
Right. I remember reading that somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. So point number one, it's not about you anymore. You know, technical mastery of our flying task is, for me at least as an instructor, it's at best, it's half the battle. You know, it's really easy to mistake proficiency for a pilot for ability as a teacher. And those can be two different things. It doesn't really matter how good of a pilot you are if you can't do a couple of things. You want to be able to duplicate your skills so that other people can do them at least as well as you can. You want to make the complex simple. I've already said that once tonight. And you want to package it in a way that makes people want to be around you, want to listen to you, want to retain what you're trying to say. You know, that's one common area of feedback I have for brand new CFI candidates when they're doing those first few presentations is I want to see your personality come out. I want you to be you. I want to relate to you. I want to enjoy my time around you. So especially if you're a new CFI or you're working on that CFI, I want you to think about your favorite teachers back in school, whether that was, you know, junior high, high school, college, wherever. They probably had some common traits. They genuinely cared about you and your outcome. They were patient. They're predictable. They wanted you to learn how to think, not always what to think. They cared about you applying what they taught you as much as standardized tests. I know it's a hot topic lately, standardized tests. And they get sometimes very few tangible rewards. They made you want to be there. So when you're thinking about you being a teacher, think back to those things. Now you're a teacher. That license says flight instructor, right? You want to be a good one? Let's talk about that.
Right. And in fact, Aaron, that's a good kind of moment to talk about, you know, our first question, which came in, which is, you know, what reasons have you learned from your experience that has caused students to disappear after solo or a successful check ride? Are there any kind of common threads through that in your experience?
That's a good question. And I would actually be interested to have kind of back and forth with you about that. I think that we don't do a very good job sometimes of handling their frustrations, you know, right around that phase of training, especially right around that first solo, we start seeing learning plateaus. I'm actually going to talk about that some tonight. Sometimes we actually get frustrated with the student and take it out on them a little bit too hard. We forget what it was like to be a student and what the struggles were. And I think we do a poor job sometimes communicating our expectations with the student, you know, especially where frustrations come in. If the student doesn't understand the expectations coming into an event because we haven't communicated them well and they don't meet them and we have some kind of reaction to that, they don't know where it comes from. So I think that, you know, there's this whole thing in the Aviation Instructor's Handbook about mitigating student frustrations, right? I don't think we do a good job with that often, and we often don't do a good job keeping the student in the loop with where are we, how are we actually doing. That's my quick off the head answers for that, but I'm curious what you might think, Tom.
Yeah, no, I think I agree with what you're saying. What I try and connect with, whether it's an initial student or someone's getting a, you know, flight review or an IPC, is I kind of do like a simple interview, like, how do you like to learn? Like, some people absorb materials so much better reading books. That's not my style. I usually like to watch videos or so I kind of try to understand what their absorption content, how they like to do that. I also like to talk to them about, you know, any kind of study habits. You know, a rule of thumb that I try to use, you know, when I was learning to fly, which is, hey, for every hour that you're going to fly, probably study at least 1 hour, maybe an hour and a half if you can. Now, granted, I know, you know, if they're part timers or they're doing weekends or after nights or works or weekends or stuff like that, that can be hard. But it's really in a time investment to make sure that material gets absorbed into their knowledge and skills and abilities as well.
I think the neat thing about that question is you and I both touched on some things that we're going to unpack even more as the presentation wears on. So sometimes it'll be very clear and sometimes it'll be incidentally, but that's a really good question. Next thing I want to bring up is, especially if you're a younger person, you know, I think about this with a lot of the CFIs that I train and hire. You know, I'm teaching even right now. I'm teaching a summer ground session at Baylor University for their CFI program. So these guys are going to be in their early 20s teaching. And a common thread that I get is, how do I get taken seriously? You know, I think about my world. Most of my active teaching in the airplane is Part 61. And so my flight school is where the business owners and the bank presidents and the professionals come. So here you are, you're a relatively young instructor, and your client, they've got more gray hair than you do. They've got more experience than you do. They've got more money than you do. And sometimes they'll let you know it. You know, how do you get taken seriously? And I distill that down to a phrase of what is your bedside manner? You know, my first instructor, and you'll see a picture of him and me later on tonight, he was an older gentleman. He was an old pro. He had been doing this for 40 years. And the best way I can describe the way Joe was with me is he had this bedside manner that wanted me to listen to every word he said. So a few things about that from my perspective. First off, smile. You're getting paid to fly an airplane, right? I know. Yep. that being a CFI is not the be-all, end-all position for most of us. I know it's a stop on the journey for most of us, but let's have fun with this. So that means we've got to be present with the student, you know, not looking down at the cell phone in the cockpit. That's become a real problem lately. Be present. Act like you want to be there. I find that most of us, we're not treated according to how old we are, how many hours we have in our logbook, the color of our hair, do we have enough gray hair or not. We're treated with the experience that we give the client. And I'm using that word on purpose, client. In my flight school, we don't have students, we have clients. I think if your mindset is treating someone like a client, you're going to act differently. You know, you show up on time. You show them that you value their time. You show up with a plan. We're going to talk more about that in a minute. You deal with contingencies like a professional. You constantly mitigate risks out loud without making it a scary thing. You can do both. You always look for ways to provide value for their money. And you admit and you immediately correct mistakes. These are things that you would expect from any other highly paid professional that you interact with. So let's expect that of ourselves as well. Those little things right there, I think, go a long way. I believe, and I've witnessed this, that clients will tolerate an okay instructor who treats them well, knows his stuff, and values their time.
Right. And I think also kind of checks in on them. Hey, you know, if they've got something going on or haven't heard from them in a little while, if they don't have like a set schedule, yeah. I know I find that as well. In fact, I have, you know, students who've passed check rides and they kind of still call me for advice. They're like, hey, can you look at this flight plan? Or what do you think about this? And I'm like, well, here's another way to look at it. Or have you thought about this? But we've got some more questions coming in. I think this might be a good place to kind of interject some. So what do you find is the hardest part or element to teaching a new CFI?
That's a great question. I'll bring that up a little bit later as well, but I'll tell you right now, I think the single hardest thing is getting them to teach with this and not with these and the feet. You know, learning when do I need to be on the controls or when do I need to be giving you a verbal correction? That's really hard. You know, I ask every new CFI class I teach, what are you worried about the most? And they all say teaching landings, right? When do I hop on the controls? Right. So I think that's number one. And it goes back to this bedside manner thing. How do I correct but remain a calming presence that inspires confidence in the student, the client, right? I think number two is teaching them to teach study skills. And that might not be an answer that was expected, but I'll tell you, again, let's go back to the Aviation Instructor's Handbook. There's an idea in the chapter about coding stuff from short-term to long-term memory. And not everybody's going, oh, God, he's going over FOI stuff, right? But one thing they talk about is how things that required effort to encode are better retained, but nobody learns how to study. I was that kid in high school. I went to high school in South Texas and in a little town. And there were some great teachers there, but it's also not known exactly as an Ivy League high school. And I kind of coasted through high school. I get to Baylor University and I find out really quickly, my mom's watching this. So she's nodding her head right now. I learned that first semester that I did not know how to study.
Yep.
We have to teach good study skills and I'll hold that thought. I'll come back to that later on this slide. I've got some things on that.
Yeah, and that's a good segue, and it reminds me there's a great book out there, What Got You Here May Not Get You There, but here's another question that kind of dovetails in with this is, so how do you handle, and you may touch on this a little bit later, so what do you do and how do you handle, are there any practical techniques that you can share about students who want to fly, but not necessarily want to study, and take that kind of book of video knowledge or computer-based training and then apply it in the cockpit?
I think problem number one there is expectations. Are we sitting them down when they're brand new clients and letting them know how much studying is actually required? I tell all of our new clients that the flying is the easy part. The studying is the important part. That's what makes an aviator. That's what makes a decision maker. So I set it up as something that's uber important. And then if we still see something like that happening, the first thing to do is talk to them. Just talk to people and tell them, hey, here's the issue we're seeing. Let's talk about how to fix it. Most people are incredibly willing to work with you if you're upfront with them about what the problem is. Now, if we've got one that's really giving us a hard time about this, we'll say, okay, let's schedule you with Aaron for a mock oral and see how you do, you know, and when right. You're not what they need to be, then we, again, professionally, not accusatorily, there's a word for you. We don't yell at them, but tell them, hey, here's what the problem is and here's why you're having it. But I think I'd say 90% of the time it goes back to expectations, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and I've had some flight instructor candidates, you know, they develop a contract with the student. But I've heard it kind of expressed with some mentors of mine is that, you know, try to get the student or the client to become a student of aviation versus a student of that certificate. And that will open up
the next slide then.
All right. Perfect. And we've got a question that's still in the queue, but we'll get to that in just a second. So let's continue. Okay, go ahead.
All right. Next point, be a calming presence. And I know that's easier said than done sometimes, but that kind of goes back to what I was just saying. One of the hardest things to teach is don't be so eager to fix stuff by just jumping on the controls. You know, one thing I really enjoy, and I there are people who will cringe when I say this, but the airplane that I teach most of my CFI candidates in is a Cherokee 180. It's an old Cherokee 180, and it doesn't have brakes on the right side. So they have to learn with me as a student how to take care of that situation with this and not being able to jump on fix things. I remember years ago, I had a relatively new instructor that had a student that he said, she just can't land. I don't know what the deal is. And this client, she had 25 hours. She should have been well ahead of where she was. So we said, would you fly with her and see what's wrong with her? And I flew with her and she landed beautifully. And she commented to me, how come you're not touching the controls?
Perfect.
This instructor was hovering over the controls the entire time, and she was never really sure who was doing the flying. So think about, put yourself in that in the student's shoes and think about what they think if they see you ready to jump on and save the day. They're never going to get that confidence to be good. And I also say along with that, if we get in a hurry, they get in a hurry. So if you talk real fast and get freaked out, so does the student. Their reactions to situations are going to mirror yours. So I call it the preacher cadence. Think about how a preacher talks when they're up there in front of the congregation. It's a very different speech pattern. It's a whole lot slower, a whole lot more deliberate. I have to do that in the airplane because despite the fact that I'm from South Texas, I talk really fast, especially when I'm nervous. You can hear it right now. Like a micro machines guy back in the 80s, right?
I'm from Jersey, so I understand what you're saying. Yes. Yeah.
So you have to slow that down. So in the airplane, I use my preacher cadence and it just makes me sound calmer, makes me more pleasant to be around when I'm teaching. And then finally, along with being calm and presence, we've got to deal with anxiety. There are lots of things that student pilots are scared of. And the first thing they need to know is that those fears are natural. You know, in my world, I've had clients that were here because they were scared of flying and wanted to conquer that. I've had clients who were here because they were scared of heights and wanted to conquer that. And the first thing I say to both of those are pretty natural fears. Mm-hmm. That sudden stop from the fall is not a good thing. It's okay to be afraid of that. So what I like to do is let's do a few things. Let's name that monster in the closet first. What is it you're scared of? So with my CFI students, I call them Charlie. Let's name Charlie. And then let's drag him out of the closet and shine a light on him so we can see him. What's he really look like? What are the outcomes we are afraid of as a result of this fear? What are you afraid is going to happen? And then let's figure out how we're going to neutralize him. We know exactly what the fear is. We know what we're afraid of. Now let's talk about how, although we can't guarantee safety, never promise that to a student. I hate the word safe because it implies no risk. We can make things safer. What are we going to do to make things safer and try to avoid that which you are anxious about? That approach to taking care of anxiety, even if it doesn't fix all of fear, it just makes you seem like more of a professional to the student, and they're going to be a whole lot more willing to listen to you. They're going to be a whole lot more willing to have new experiences that maybe they're a little bit uncomfortable with because they realize you're going to take care of them and their numero uno.
Right. And that's where you kind of have that human connection with the student, because right. I had a student who I picked up after a couple of 50 hours or something like that. And we go into practice steep turns after I pick him up, and as a student rather. And he shares a story that he got into not a safe situation with a previous instructor. So we had to talk about it. And he says, Tom, thanks very much. No one has ever asked me. And I'm like, oh, so now we know where to connect and then go from there. And he's doing great. But, you know, and to kind of get to this one other question. So if someone wanted to if they're not a CFI and demonstrate something to a passenger, like a stall or a steep turn, any kind of tips or techniques to kind of talk about that sort of bedside manner or, you know, risk mitigation, anything you can share on that?
Yeah, I would say, obviously, don't attempt to demonstrate anything to a passenger that you're not confident and proficient with. I mean, that kind of goes without saying. I would do it if the passenger asks for it. You know, one thing, and we've all seen them, you know, there's all kinds of YouTube videos and TikToks and Instagrams of, let's see how bad we can scare a passenger. Let's see if we can make our girlfriend throw up. We don't need that in aviation. We've got enough against us as it is right now. So let's not do things to scare passengers. But assuming the passengers ask for it and you want to demonstrate it to them, set the expectations first. Here's what you're going to see, hear, feel, smell, whatever. Here's what I'm going to do. Here's why I'm going to do it. Here's what place it has in the training I went through as a pilot. And ask me any questions that you have. Let me know at any point if you're uncomfortable and I'll quit doing what I'm doing. Instead of, gee whiz, let's see if I can scare you.
Awesome. All right. Good stuff.
All right. Next up, and this kind of goes back to some things that you and I have both talked about just in general and in answering some questions too. I think why is really important. I think it gets lost in what a whole lot. The question why is more important than content sometimes. Now, if you don't know why you're doing something, that's really anything in life, right? It makes it really hard for what to be effective or worthwhile. And you notice I said, why are you there first? Because I think if you as the instructor don't address this, then it's really hard for you to be worth much to your clients. I personally think that every flight instructor should have what I call a philosophy of instruction. This goes back to grad school for me. So my master's degree concentrated on adult learners. It was specifically on working with college students, everything from your 18-year-olds to your non-traditional older college students. And one thing they really harp on in that world is if you're going to work with students, they call them learners in that world, you need to know why you're there. What is your philosophy of instruction? So when I say that, it's what do your students uniquely get out of flying with you? Mm. What is your legacy going to be? And I think it's something that if you're going to be a pro with this, you should be able to espouse off the top of your head in a sentence or two. And that's something that I actually try to get my instructors to share up front on lesson number one with their students. I'll jump down one point and then come back and I'll let you tell you my philosophy, but remember readiness. Back to the FOI again, that very first principle of learning, right? Readiness, really what that says is why, right? So right. My philosophy of instruction, just to give you an example, it's got four parts. Number one, I teach people how to learn how to fly. It's very different than teaching them how to fly. That means I need to teach them how to learn things in general, right? Give a man a fish versus teach a man how to fish, right? Number two, exactly. This will go back to something you said, Tom. I try to inspire clients to be lifelong students of aviation. I do that by the way I present material. I do that by the way I carry myself. I do that by the way I act around them. Three, I train clients to be a pilot of command a chief pilot of one. And that is instilling in them what it is to be pilot in command, what it is to have rational, repeatable personal minimums and set policies like a 121 carrier would. And four, I create aviation families. That's a big deal to me in the Part 61 world, is I feel like we are the side of flight instruction that not just builds aviation professionals, but we build general aviation. Anytime anybody asks me, tell me about your flight school, that's the first thing I lead with. Now we know why I'm there, and it influences everything I do. If something I'm doing isn't true to that, then I'm doing the wrong thing. Now,
that goes a long way. I mean, that's culture is what you're really talking about.
It's culture. Yeah. If you want to be treated like a professional, you need to have a mission statement. I know that mission statement is like a 1990s business buzzword, but it turns out it's a pretty useful thing. I think, again, if you don't know why you're there, what are you doing there? Right. Now you move on to the client. Why are they there? What do they want? You know, you can't teach somebody who wants to fly for United Airlines the same way that you're going to teach the guy who wants to fly the Air Tractor or the guy who wants to fly a Cessna 182 on business trips, right? You need to know their motivation. Nope. I try to tie that motivation back to the student at every opportunity. I don't believe that you can actually motivate another person, but you can definitely illuminate a motivation and leverage it. Sometimes that involves asking good questions to the client. Like you said, let's dig a little bit deeper. Okay, why are you here? Okay, great. What are you going to get from that? And try to get down to the very essence of what it is you're doing here. I'll bring up later, I think as professional educators, we need to know about some theorists out there beyond what's in the Aviation Instructor's Handbook. And one theorist that I look at a lot is a guy named Erickson. Erickson has a theory with 8 stages of psychosocial development. And I know I'm getting kind of off in the weeds here, but the 8th one is the very last stage as we age and, you know, late in life, and it's integrity versus despair. In other words, did we do what we were put on this planet to do? And that sounds a lot like that very top human need on Maslow's hierarchy that's in the FOI. So it makes a lot of sense. And I think you need, that's the big whys, right? But it's important. But we also need to be informed about the little whys. Why am I teaching this particular knowledge element? You know, how does it relate to the bigger picture? Why am I teaching this maneuver? I'll say it repeatedly throughout the rest of the night tonight. Meeting an ACS requirement is not a learning outcome. We are teaching this because in the ACS, it's not a good reason. And trust me, I haven't found anything in the ACS, at least at the private level yet, that I don't see a bigger purpose to. I think it's good stuff. So how does it fit in the bigger picture? And let the student know, right? Hey, we're doing this today because, and have a real because, not because the syllabus says so, not because the ACS says so. And now we've got the first in all in that list of learning principles met, right? But I think it's a biggie.
Fantastic.
Next up, I think it's really hard to be better than your plan. There's been a lot of talk about this recently. One of my colleagues in Canada, Kimberly, and I know she has a lot of stuff that John posts on the NAFI Facebook page, talk a lot about this. But if we're going to treat our students like clients of any professional, they deserve consistency and they deserve efficiency. No contractor is going to show up to a job site without a blueprint. You're not going to achieve either, right? I mean, are you going to buy a house where they showed up and said, what are we doing today? Where does that piece of wood go? Let's stick it right here. Of course you're not, but we do that way too often in flight instruction. It's not impossible to achieve the consistency and the efficiency that clients deserve with that plan, but it's really, really hard. Notice I've got the picture of the ACS there on the slide. Again, the ACS is not a plan. There are a lot of people who have been on this broadcast and elsewhere who are smarter than me, who I completely agree with, that say that the ACS is the worst a client can do and become a pilot. So that probably shouldn't be our training plan, right? So a few things about plans. Number one, hopefully, I mean, do you have a syllabus or are you using it? You know, we need to know what order am I teaching this stuff in so that it works together instead of being isolated tasks. You know, we could teach slow flight and say, okay, now you know how to do slow flight and power off stalls, now you know how to do that. And then landings and make it this isolated thing by itself, or we could use slow flight and power off stalls to teach the landings. So we need a logical flow to teach this stuff in so that one thing leverages upon another. Again, are they being taught intentionally like that? Are they being taught because the ACS says we've got to teach it? And then I would say, if you're a flight school owner, you got to ask yourself, is my syllabus working for the clients, actually getting the outcomes that I want and being tweaked when it needs it? Or is it gathering dust and serving as a placeholder? And I guarantee there are some of us that have syllabi that we think our CFIs are using and they're not. We need to make sure they're using it and that it's a live document that's working. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, that's a great pivot to one of our next questions, which is, you know, share some of your experiences or insight of when it is time to suggest a change in a CFI. And there's probably a whole host of reasons, but that's a whole nother session, likely.
Yeah, that's probably a whole nother session. And I could interpret change in a lot of different ways. I'm going to assume the question is a change in the way a CFI is doing something.
Yeah, that's probably a good place to
read it. Yes. I think, well, for one thing, if they're one of my CFIs, I know why they're here. And so I'm going to tie the fact that I'm even having this discussion with them back to their motivation. And then we're going to be really honest and put everything on the table. Hey, I've observed your clients. I've talked to your clients. I know you've talked to your clients. And this thing that you're doing here, the way you're putting this, it's just not working. Let's work together to find a way to tweak this just a little bit and make it work the way that you and the client want to. And no matter where the CFI is headed in aviation, it's pretty easy to tie that to their purpose, because they're going to have conversations like that the rest of their career. And it doesn't mean that they're an awful CFI. Doesn't mean they're a bad person. Sometimes you could have the best technique in the world and it just isn't working on this student. So I guess if I had to boil that long-winded answer down to one sentence, it's being upfront and honest and probably asking some good questions about, okay, you're still doing this. Why are we doing this? Let them talk too, you know?
Okay, so let me, now here's the other side of it. It's a different question, but it's kind of the same subject. So do you ever need to fire a student for not having the right stuff? Or what's maybe rephrased a little bit is, how do you handle a situation where maybe the student isn't at a certain rate or a pace of that learning?
We need to figure out why first. Okay. I want to make sure that it's not a teaching method, that it's not something in my syllabus or lesson plan, that it's not something that CFI is doing. Let's eliminate all those possibilities first. And then again, I'm a real fan. I think if you want good answers, you got to ask good questions. So we're going to talk to the student about what exactly are you not understanding? You know, if it's, I cannot get landings down. Okay, well, how many different parts are there to landings? Let's figure out, is there some building block in there that just didn't take well? Let's see if we can address that first. Normally, in my experience anyway, if the student especially is the one who's brought the matter up, they're willing to work on it and they'll take advice. I think maybe the dark side of that and maybe what this question is really getting at is what about the student who doesn't seem to even be aware that they don't have I think the question says the right stuff. That's a different discussion. You know, is the student, are they just not flying often enough? Are they not investing time and effort in studying? Are they not taking this seriously? That's a whole different discussion where, you know, I've been as blunt as to say, listen, when I sign you off for this practical test and you pass this thing, I've given you the tools to kill your entire family. We have to take those tools seriously. Now let's get real here. Now, I say that and that sounds real dramatic. I think I've had that discussion twice in my career.
Right. I was taught as a young flight instructor, and then we'll get to another question, is don't cheapen your signature either.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, we know about the flight review and all that stuff, but I like the way you phrase it. So Ali asks, is the FOI a sufficient base in education for a new CFI to be considered a teacher?
Oh boy, you're going to get me in trouble. I think the FOI is good enough to make a CFI.
Okay.
I think that you need to constantly develop yourself if you're going to be a good CFI. And I know that sounds like I'm tiptoeing around an answer, and I don't want to offend anybody, because there's a lot of people that are really good instructors and have been for years, and that was probably their only training as a teacher. But, I mean, look, I don't want to take anything away from like, let's say, kindergarten teachers. They're vital to society, right? But how life and death is what they're teaching. You know, it's stuff that we have to know, but colors, numbers, shapes, that kind of stuff, somebody's got to teach it, and God bless them. I don't have that kind of patience, or maybe I do and I just don't know it. But somebody who's going to teach that stuff, they've got a four-year degree in education. Four-year degree in education to teach kindergartners. And they need every bit of those 4 years, if not more than that. And we're supposed to believe that one book and one written test and a few questions on the oral exam is going to make a teacher. That's just not possible. That's why we do stuff like this. That's why Mentor Live is so important. That's why the PDP is so important. I'll bring that up later, but I'll tell you, if you're watching right now and you haven't taken advantage as a NAPI member of the professional development program, you're missing out. John Niehaus and his team have done such an incredible job putting that together, and it's free to you as a member. And it does go so far above and beyond the FOI you can go develop yourself. So the opportunities are there. So the FOI can make an instructor, but it's really incumbent upon you to be a good instructor. And that's the case in any industry, in any job.
Awesome. So now as we've got, you know, to be better than our plan, I think your next subject or next topic is about executing the plan. Can you cover a little bit about that?
I'm going to make one more point on this slide, and then I know we need to get moving. But
yeah,
I'll say this about lesson plans. Lesson plans are not just for the CFI check ride. That's something else I've observed a lot in the field. And I know we love to hate those things because the format can be really goofy sometimes. So I'll just suggest a couple of things. And if you are a CFI candidate, write your lesson plans in a way that you'd actually execute them and use them as CFIs. Make it useful to yourself. If you're a flight school owner and you're training CFIs, use that process as part of your onboarding. When my CFI candidates write their lesson plans, they have a template that I want them to follow. I tell them what order I typically teach stuff in and what is usually in each lesson, and it's their job to go fill in the blanks, right? So they have a master document, and their studying puts in all the need-to-know stuff. And guess what? My syllabus and my lesson plans for our ground sessions and for our flight lessons reference the lesson plans they wrote at CFIs. Their onboarding is done when they pass the checkpoint.
That's great. Again,
doesn't mean they're ready to be a great instructor yet, but their learning curve has been steepened. So I think that is a missed opportunity if flight school owners are not doing that.
That's a great technique.
On to executing the plan, there's a lot of good stuff in the Aviation Instructor's Handbook about lesson plans. I'm going to boil it down and just make it less jargony. And full disclosure, where I got this from, again, doing a master's degree that they concentrate on working with college students, I lifted this from the student life staff at Baylor University. You know, they're a Baptist school, they're very service oriented. And one thing that they wanted to do when they had students go out on service projects was make sure the students actually learn something from it, right? So they came up with this model. Anytime they do something out in the field, they will prepare the students for the experience, then engage in the experience, then have the students reflect on it. And I remember in grad school thinking, that's what I'm going to do as a flight instructor: prepare, engage, reflect. So if your plan has each of those steps, you're good. I don't think it takes the place of the lesson plans and the AIH for your CFI check ride. So don't go to your CFI check ride and say, Aaron Dabney said, but in execution, I think this is pretty helpful. So let's look at each step real quickly here. I know we're starting to get a little bit short on time. Prepare. Do we actually have a learning outcome? And again, not an ACS element, but a learning outcome. What am I trying to teach? So am I teaching some new skill set, steep turns, power off stalls, power off 180s, whatever? Or am I consolidating things I've already taught into higher order tasks? And if so, which little parts are we calling on, right? So if I taught you how to use a hammer 2 weeks ago and how to use a saw last week, today I'm going to teach you how to use the hammer and a saw to build a wall. Again, tell the students that. Leverage what you've already taught. Make it work for you. What parts are you assembling? Remember, in the FOI, known the unknown, right? That's all we're really doing here is known the unknown. Set expectations for the student, right? What are you going to learn today? Because remember, when someone's in an unfamiliar environment and they're back to the FOI, when they're trying to code stuff from short-term to long-term memory, one of the factors that determines what they encode is what they place priority on. And when you're brand new to an environment, you don't know what's a priority and what's not. So let's go ahead and set those priorities up front with the student out loud. What are they going to look for in the airplane? You know, is there a configuration we need to use today? Let's talk about it before we get in the cockpit. Where are our eyeballs today? Let's talk about it before we get in the cockpit. What are you going to see, hear, feel? What do I expect of your performance today, right? Because remember, on a good day, they may remember half of what we say in the airplane. It's a really poor teaching environment. It's hot, especially here in Texas. It's hot out there today. It's hot. It's bumpy. It's noisy. You've got ATC in the background. And once all of that's there, now you're over there in their ear, and you sound like Charlie Brown's mama. Wah, 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 wah. So if it's important, let's say it in the briefing, right? And then I always put risk mitigation up front. What are the risks today, and what are we going to do about them? And every ground lesson, we actually talk before we hit the ground lesson on where are we in PAVE with this knowledge element. which element of PAVE are we actually giving you information to make the decisions with? And the same before we fly, hey, let's deliberately talk about PAVE. It's not an ACS item. It keeps you alive.
Yeah, and I think this is a good time. Daniel's under the prepare. Daniel's got a question about how do you feel about buying a syllabi or syllabus rather versus developing one yourself?
So that's where I think I walk the saber fairly well the way I do it. I think if you buy one, don't buy one that has all the supporting material written in, because now you're in the position of having to study somebody else's. I think, again, if we assume that in order to learn something well, we need to put effort into it, you're not going to learn the material very well just reading somebody else's stuff. But it's also difficult when you're brand new. So I say, okay, Tom, go home this weekend and write me a ground lesson on runway incursion mitigation. Well, you remember something about that from your commercial check ride?
Right.
Where the heck do I even start, right? So I want you to have an outline. I want you to know what are the important elements you should be hitting, but I want you to go get your supporting info for each element. So you have a direction that you've been aimed in. You're not crawling around on your hands and knees in the dark, but it forces you to study and really learn the material. So if it's a for sale syllabus that has, or a lesson plan that has everything there, I think you're probably robbing yourself.
Right. And you own, and you got to own the material.
Exactly.
When you develop it. Right. And you know what's in it.
Yeah,
exactly.
I just don't forget that when you're writing your lesson plans, what you're really doing is studying. That's exactly when you really begin to learn the material. So don't eliminate your opportunities to become proficient at the material.
Right. And then you become more familiar where it actually is and then right. Where to refer to it when it changes or updates. Exactly. I love it.
So, all you right. know, as big of a pain in the rear as the experience can be sometimes, everything that we put you through in CFI training actually does serve a really important purpose if you'll follow along with us.
Absolutely.
Okay, so we've prepared. Now let's engage. So I could talk about this for 3 hours. I promise I'm not going to, because that would be. But a few things. First off, as we actively teach, let's not rush the basics. And I've got a quick story about this. As some of y'all probably watched, now I think it's last summer, we did a briefing room podcast on teaching straight and level flight. And the backstory on that, when I was at Oshkosh, John Niehaus texted me and said, hey, we've got a new CFI that wonders if we would do this thing on straight and level flight. And I kind of chuckled. I'm like, okay, yeah, whatever. So we get on, and there's Brian Schiff and Bob Metter and John Niehaus. And so I'm like, you've got a program chair and these two bad you-know-whats and little Aaron Dabney, and what are we going to do for half an hour about straight and level flight? We went for an hour.
Right.
Most of it was talking about how we rushed through those basics, and it so negatively impacts the more important tasks later on. So straight and level, coordinated turns, maintaining altitude, maintaining airspeed, aircraft coordination, these are where you're teaching the student a system. And I'll get into that more in a second, but don't rush. I know straight and level flight's not sexy. I know when you put a new instrument student under the hood, holding, heading, and altitude is not sexy, but if they can't do that stuff, they're going to be really poor at all the other stuff.
Right, and it's the blocking and tackling for whatever the rating that you're going to. Yeah, it all builds. Exactly. Right.
And it takes some patience. I mean, I know teaching straight and level flight and turns is boring as all get out, but again, smile. You're being paid to fly airplanes. It'll be okay. So systems. That's a huge part of our job, the way I look at it. We're teaching systems. There's a saying that's really frequently repeated in business, and that's systems don't fail people, people fail systems. What do I mean here? Let's look at it from an example outside of aviation. So there's a subway right off the edge of the airport, and I'm there way often than I want to admit. Let's just say when I walk in, they know what I'm going to order. So if anybody wants to assassinate me, they know where to meet me. But I've also had Subway in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, St. Louis, Missouri, Munich, Germany. And that 6-inch cold cut sandwich on Italian urban cheese, it tastes the same whether I'm in Texas or Wisconsin or Germany. Why is that? They have a system. That system mitigates a lot of human factors. It can't mitigate all of them, but it mitigates a lot of human factors. So we follow the system, things turn out the way they're supposed to. So are we teaching our students systemic ways of doing things where they have them to guess? Closely related to that is, are we giving them duplicable, repeatable steps they can do in the same order every single time, or are they having to make it up as they go? I see a lot on mock check rides and on flight reviews, more than I want to. You'll ask them two different times, for example, let's set the airplane up for slow flight, and they do it differently each time. And it's like they're trying to, what we say in the South, they're trying to hold their mouth right, right? Is it, am I going to get what I want? And a funnier way of thinking about it is like, we're going to put this configuration and this power setting and this trim setting, we're going to put them all in a trash can, and we're going to shake it real good, and we're going to see what comes out stuck together. A student should never have to guess about how to set something up or do something. So we need to make sure we're expressing these things in repeatable steps in the same order every single time. That means that simple show and tell, I want to show you one, you do one, that can be effective, but it's a lot more painful and it takes a whole lot longer. So systems, duplicable steps, super important.
Great point.
I think in teaching, we need to remember that facts tell and stories sell. That's another business quote, but it's I think, relevant to what we do, because let's face it, there are some things we teach that can come off as really dry. If we can find some sort of story to back it up, whether it's a there I was story, and like you were saying earlier, Tom, what's the rule in the Air Force? 10% truth is truth enough, right? So there I was, something, or there somebody else was.
Right.
It can be a case study. It can be an NTSB report. It can be an Air Safety Foundation video, whatever the case might be. People want to know how stories end. And if you don't believe me, think back to first grade. I don't know if they still do this because I guess I'm getting old, but I can remember we would always have an hour in first grade where the teacher would read a book. And sometimes it was a book that I was not interested in at all, but when she started the story, I wanted to know how it ended. People will pay attention to you longer, I won't say permanently, but longer with a story than just by presenting facts. So that's a little technique that helps a whole lot.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I think we need to get better, most of us do, at dealing with learning plateaus. Hey, look, there's another FOI word for you, right? I'll tell you where I see this a lot, and a lot of y'all probably gonna nod your heads. It's on the landing. So we started on landings 2 days ago, and I did okay. And then yesterday, I was, and today, I was really awful. And so what a lot of us decide the recipe for success is gonna be is, let's go out and do it again tomorrow. You know, maybe if I run into the wall at full speed again tomorrow, it won't hurt or bleed next time. It's going to. We need to back off. You're frustrating the student, right? Again, think about those building blocks. Is it the landing? It's part of the landing. So what is it they're not getting? Are they not getting the flare? Are they not getting the side slip? Let's go work on the element they're not getting and do something different for just a little while and watch how much faster that plateau task corrects itself than just hammering the student over the head. We all know that intellectually, if we pay attention to the FOI, but it's one of those things, like we were saying earlier, Tom, that if you pay attention to what you see in the real world, the FOI was completely right about that. And we should pay attention to body language. How is the student sitting? How are they holding the controls? One thing I notice a lot when students are scared of or nervous about landings is when I'm about half mile final, and all of a sudden the shoulders curl up like this, and everything gets real tensed up. Sometimes I fix landings by saying, breathe, loosen up all your big joints, look down the runway. So where are their hands? Where are their feet? Where are their eyeballs? Are they breathing? Are they relaxed in their seat like I'm not right now? Or are they all hunched forward? Watch that body language.
Yeah, and I'll throw in my technique. I watch hands, eyes, feet, and then I watch what their knuckles are doing.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And sometimes the tendons. I mean, I know it sounds kind of – but then no, I can see what they're gripping. And what I was taught at a young age is put a pencil in between your fingers. If that works, there you go. You got it. See?
Yep. Great minds.
That's maybe it's another Naffy Mentor Live.
There you go.
Okay.
Let's see. You have a question we need to talk about here? Or we
did. We do have one. Allie asks, should the CFI be able to demonstrate accurately every maneuver he expects the client to learn?
Yes.
Okay.
Does that mean you need to be a super pilot? No. But do you need to be able to demonstrate it? Yes. Now I realize there's opportunities for our skills to atrophy. A lot of us in Part 61 don't see a commercial student for some time after we finish that CFI check ride. And, you know, for me, gosh, it was about a year and a half because I had to start my client load from ground zero. I was the chief cook and bottle washer to flight school on day one. So guess what I did? I ran the airplane for myself, and I went out and worked on Chandelles and Lazy Eights and Pylon Eights and all that. And I forget, one of them I was having problems with, so I brought a colleague along and I said, hey, help me figure out what I'm doing wrong here. So I think, do we have to be, you know, sully? No, but do we owe it to our clients to be able to do what we're asking them to do? I think that's what a professional does. That's my opinion.
Yep, I like it.
Couple more points here, and then I'll try to keep on punching along here. We should definitely demonstrate the use of resources. So that just goes back to that CFI check ride thing. I don't know. Let's look it up together. Let them see you doing that. Let them see you asking ATC to repeat things. We just don't need to pretend that we know everything, see everything, hear everything. Let them see that I'm a human being, and I'm going to go back and make sure those tracks are covered and I know what I'm supposed to know. And then use scenarios. I know that we make a big deal nowadays about scenario-based training, but I think it's worth its weight in gold. You know, we give the student an opportunity to actually take these things that we're teaching them sort of seemingly in isolation and put them together in a big picture to solve a real problem. You're showing them the value of what they're being taught. And a bonus for us is we get to put the student under a little bit more stress and see how they handle it. You know, is there anything about their anxiety response that we can help them out with before they encounter these things out in the wild? Plus, it's just a little more engaging to the student. You know, we can say, okay, divert me to this airport, or we can give them a scenario that requires a diversion. Which one's gonna require more brain power on their part? Which one's more engaging? So I think that the emphasis of late on scenario-based training is definitely barking up the right tree.
Okay, so we got a quick question from Lacey, and then we'll get to the reflect portion. So can we talk how a new CFI can build, gather, or obtain good scenarios for teaching when they are a new CFI that went straight from commercial check ride to teaching with little or no industry experience? Anything you can quickly share on that?
Use your mentors. One thing that I've actually got a file on the computer I'm on right now, scenarios for various learning outcomes, and my new CFIs are encouraged and expected to use those. But you know what, if a CFI from one of the other flight schools down the ramp came to me and said, hey, Aaron, do you have a scenario I can borrow? I'll let them steal my scenarios. So I think that's one of the biggest assets you have is finding somebody who sees the value of scenario-based training and pick their brain. Because we've all got these pet scenarios and we're really eager to share because we all think ours are the best, right? But some of the stuff that's in the FOI about scenarios is really good. You know, number one, what's the learning outcome or outcomes that I'm trying to influence here? What are the things that I want the student to have to call on? What are some of the possible correct answers the student could provide a scenario? And where am I going to do this? I think one thing that is important about the way Lacey's asking her question is that she's thinking about this ahead of time. You cannot contrive a very good scenario on the fly. If we are going to do all this stuff about knowing the why and having a plan and all that, that means our scenarios too. So that might actually be a good topic for a future mentor live, as a matter of fact, is just maybe either designing scenarios or working through some best practices for scenarios that have worked before.
Yeah, and I think there's some really good resources on FAA.gov, so I would recommend folks checking that out. Okay, and I think we're on to the reflect portion.
Excellent. This air hour is going by way faster than I thought it would. That's crazy.
As we had talked before, right?
We knew this would happen with you and I. Okay, so the reflect step. So I asked this question of the CFIs that I work with one-on-one here at the airport and the CFIs that I have in a classroom setting at Baylor. How many of you have heard an instructor in your training sometimes say, great job, see you next time? And that's a debrief. And it kills me to say that every hand in that classroom goes up. We are not doing our job if we're doing that. The reflect step is where most learning happens. If we are not taking care of that and assigning takeaways and redirecting bad takeaways, they're going to learn the wrong stuff or not learning at all. I think I've said this like five times a night. Remember what you read in the FOI about what is coded in long-term memory depends on priorities. Well, how do they know what their priorities are if we're not telling them, right? how do we know if they saw what we wanted them to see or took away what we want to take away? So I actually ask my students on the way back to the office from the airplane, what'd you learn today? Ask questions. If you want good answers, ask good questions. They're going to tell you what they learned. And if it's what you wanted them to learn, excellent. Great job. If it's not, now is your chance when it is super fresh on their mind to redirect them to what you want them to take away from the flight. I like distinct takeaways, and I like lists of three. People can remember threes very well. So for every lesson, I'm gonna make sure they leave with at least three big things I want them to take away. And I love it. I love it when a plan works out. I was sitting in on a debrief with a relatively new CFI who's been with me for a very short time today. And I walked out of the room early, but as I'm walking in the hall, I hear him ask the student, so what three things did you learn today? Yes, I love it when a plan works out. So again, good questions. What do you wish had gone better? Especially once they've got a little bit of training on their belt, they know where they're underperforming. Let them ask you for advice. It's going to be accepted a whole lot more than you saying you were bad at this. What do you think went well today? And again, just good questions get good answers. I am a huge fan of the flight journal. What that is I'll tell students, hey, go buy you like a 90-cent spiral notebook, and before you leave the airport, write down what you learned today. Write down those three takeaways that we said you took away. Write down the steps to execute the maneuver you learned today. Write down what you want to work on for next time. Because again, if we're having to use a little bit of effort to learn this stuff, which writing, depending on whose research you're looking at, writing is between 7 and 11 times more effective than reading. Pen to paper, not keyboard, right? The students who do that, yeah, improve.
I was going to say that.
It's not even funny.
I was going to say that that imprints the memory if they experience that themselves. Yep, that's a
absolutely
great point.
Does. We assign a lot of homework. You know, it's not lengthy homework, but again, if we're going to teach them this stuff, example, weather. And I know most of us have had this frustration at least once. You teach METARs and TAFs, right? And then you never bring it up again. And now it's time to plan across country. And you say, okay, well, go pull METAR up. And I'm going to give you another phrase we use in Texas. The student looks at you like a cow looking at a new gate. They're like, what was that again? Okay, if I'm going to teach you METARs today, I'm going to give you homework tonight. And we're going to go look up METARs in about 10 different cities where I know there's some juicy weather going on right now. And you're going to come back with a report for me. Get them to use this stuff you're teaching them. Because again, if it's these little isolated data points and skill sets, they don't see how they work together. But if you start letting them use it in daily life, now you are doing what? You're carrying out two things in my philosophy. You're teaching them how to learn how to do stuff, and you're making them a lifelong student of aviation. So it's important.
And finally, right, and that application and correlation is really important.
Exactly, there you go. And then finally, what's next? What do we expect next? Another thing, the probably tied for most frustrating thing I see with the great job, see you next time, is when a student shows up and the instructor says, hey, what are we working on again today? Guess what? You're the teacher. They're the client. You should know what's next. So let's tell them what's next before they leave today so that they can read ahead and they're more prepared for that lesson. Because if they've at least seen the words we're going to use once, we've got a little bit more of common language. And again, it goes back to another FOI thing. If we keep students in the loop and informed of progress, they are a lot less frustrated. Right?
Good points.
All right. Almost done, I promise. I know we're going a little bit over. A few things about continuing your training as an instructor. And this is what I was talking about when I said I think the FOI makes a CFI but does not make a quote-unquote great instructor. For one thing, realize that the Aviation Instructor's Handbook is not an exhaustive textbook on teaching. Remember, kindergarten teachers, God bless them, they're better teachers than I am. They do 4 years of college to do their job. So we should not be so high on ourselves as to think that one book's going to do it. Read other stuff on education. There's tons of good books out there, especially on adult learners. There are seminars. There are community college courses, continuing ed courses on adult learners. I'm going to jump down to the bottom. Again, I mentioned this before. We have the excellent PDP program through NAFI. We have the FAA WINGS program, which we were talking about this before we began a broadcast. That is a vastly underutilized resource. that is so excellent for developing you as a pilot and as an instructor. I'll jump back up. Get some new skill sets for yourself. Go out there and get your tailwheel endorsement. Get your seaplane rating. Do some glider flying. Go out and do some aerobatic flying that's beyond your spin training. Not only are you probably going to learn something that you can directly employ in your own teaching, you know, we're based right on a big man-made lake here in Waco, and my students are always laughing because I'm pointing out the wind streaks on the lake. Well, I learned that when I was doing seaplane flying, right? It's kind of a gee whiz, but it comes in handy sometimes, you know? Plus, it keeps you more passionate. When you're doing something besides beating up the practice area in a 172, it puts a smile on your face, and it brings you back to work to do what? Smile, because you're getting paid to do this, right? And finally, I've talked about this before tonight, but have some mentors. Have some people who've been doing this for longer than you have that you look up to, and bounce ideas off of them, bounce problems off of them, come to them with your problems. I did a really dumb thing on a flight when I was a brand new CFI. I'm not going to tell you all what it was. It was embarrassing, but I did a really dumb thing. And I remember driving home that night thinking, oh my gosh, I should cut this ticket up and send it back to the FAA. And I called one of my mentors, he's still a great friend, still a mentor. He's flying the 737 at United Airlines now. I'm super proud of him. And I told him what had happened and how I felt. And he said, Aaron, the fact that you're calling me about this is what makes me think you're going to be okay. And that's all I needed to hear. What if I tried to deal with that myself, you know? So mentors are worth their weight in gold. And don't forget your local DPEs as mentors. If you're not sitting in on check ride debriefs, you're missing out. You're going to find out where are your blind spots as an instructor, where are the holes in your curriculum? Are there any trends you need to address? The DPEs are going to tell you if they see things that are really egregious, but you can get some really, really good between the lines sort of finesse stuff if you're sitting in on these debriefs. And again, if you want to take it seriously as a professional, DPEs like their advice being listened to. So if you're the instructor who's willing to listen to a debrief, take notes, and improve yourself, guess who the DPE is going to recommend in town? You are.
Yeah, so, that's a great point.
Yeah, so just don't forget, just like any other career, having the diploma, having the license in your pocket, what do we tell new private pilots? It's a license to learn, right? So is the CFI. Close things up for me, and then you might have a couple more questions. I would just encourage anyone who's a CFI, whether you've been at this for a month or you've been at this for 40 years, think about what's your legacy. Somebody asked me not long ago, what is the driving force behind what you do at work, what you do in life? And it was in kind of a group setting, and the word that came to my head is legacy. You know, am I going to leave the planet better than I found it? Am I going to leave my city better than I found it? Am I going to leave my profession better than I found it? So we can never forget that we have a sacred responsibility to not just our clients, but to the flying public. The way we do our jobs directly impacts public safety among even people who will never even get on an airplane. That's a pretty big deal. That's a big job to put on our shoulders. We got to take that seriously. And with that, you can impact people you will never meet. Doing a good job as a CFI, we can positively impact generations of pilots who will fly long after we retire. And most importantly, you're going to be remembered. You know, you as a flight instructor are going to be one of the most important people in your clients' lives. How they remember you is up to you. And I'm smiling because I'm looking at this picture. That is, I'm definitely going to say his name on the broadcast. He's a cool guy. His name is Joe Kostler. He taught me how to fly. And that's me and our family cub as a little 19-year-old punk who acted like a 19-year-old punk. And I guarantee you he had to use more patience with me than I've ever used with a student. And I will always love him for that. He has a huge influence in my life. He still checks in with me from time to time. And he thinks it's pretty cool that I've decided to be a career instructor. But I think about the large role that Joe still has in my life and how much I think about him anytime I'm thinking about my students. If they're going to remember me half as often as I remember him, I better take this job seriously.
Yeah, that's a great point, because you've been inspired to carry that through. And we've got a couple more questions that I think are apropos for this moment. So how do we encourage more to become lifelong full-time CFIs?
That's a hard one. You know, I struggle with that because I love this. And I've had a few CFIs work for me that I really wish could have been lifelong CFIs. And, you know, I would never tell somebody, well, you should stay because I have. But I think we need to look at different reasons for becoming a CFI. If I develop that thought a little bit more, most people who become CFIs are doing it because it's a step. And there is zero wrong with that. Don't hear me saying that. It's an important step because you're going to build experience and you're going to build insights that you just can't get as a time builder, right? But as far as career CFIs, I think we need to recruit outside of our industry a little bit. There are a lot of people in society who are passionate about teaching and passionate about changing lives and benefiting people that think like good teachers. And I think sometimes I can't prove it because I haven't gotten to do it much, but I think it would be easier to make a good teacher into a good CFI than it is to make a good pilot into a good CFI. So I think maybe we should focus more on who we are introducing our profession to than trying to convince somebody to change their goals. Now, that said, I think it's a whole lot more sustainable to be a career CFI if you do a couple of things. Number one, if you have a niche. I've taught Tailwheel for years. That brings a lot of really cool clients in. I've had clients from literally all over the world, and I can make decent money doing that, and it's fun. The other thing is being a flight school owner. And I know business ownership sounds scary to people, but you're never going to have true leverage working for somebody. So I think it's a whole lot more sustainable for me as a career in owning the business. But I mean, let's face it, I'm not going to sit here and say we should be paying CFIs six figures because we can't. The industry can't sustain that. So I think we need to look more at reasons, intrinsic reasons for being a CFI and ways to make it financially viable without jacking the cost up than we do convincing people to change their goals. I hope that makes sense.
No, I think that's a great way to explain it. A few more questions. I know we're going to run, or we're running over, but I think this one's is good as well. So Ray asks, what do I do if my DPE and instructors disagree?
That's tough.
It's a good tough question.
Pick your battles. Is obviously, we all know that the DPE process is not a perfect one. It's probably better than it could be in a lot of ways, but it's not a perfect one. We know that DPEs, different DPEs do different check rides differently. It's all different within there. So how big of a deal is a disagreement? You know, if it's something that is a total deal breaker for you and the DPE is testing something in a way that you just say, I cannot, with my sense of integrity, teach it this way, then that would be a discussion for their POI at the FISDO. If it's a style of disagreement, you got two choices. Change your style, which what I mean is, is there a technique for a procedure that you like that they don't like, right? There's a couple of that. One of my closest aviation friends is a DPE, and there are a couple of techniques that we don't see eye to eye on. But when I send him applicants, guess how they do it? His way. Look, we invest a lot. If you're doing the things I suggested, we invest a lot in trying to train pilots to look like we want them to like. So I get that. But if we're not spending some time giving the student the tools to pass the check ride, then we're not doing what we're supposed to be doing. So change the technique or use a different DPE. But first and foremost, battles. Is this a battle worth fighting?
All right. And I think we've got one more question. It's kind of philosophical, so it's probably a good way to conclude tonight if there's no more questions. So do we, Aaron, for you, do we really teach people how to fly, or is it more accurate to say that we facilitate their learning?
I agree completely with that. That goes back to the first part of my philosophy of instruction. I think that if you just teach a person a discrete task, then you're not painting the whole picture. I think that we are more of a tour guide to learning than we are teachers of a discrete task, if that makes sense.
It does. I think that's a great way. Let me take a look at the queue. Yeah, I think that's all the questions. But and I know as we talked in our pre-flight earlier today, we knew we were going to run a little bit long. So hopefully, the folks and the viewers have gotten some great tips and insights out of this. You know, I'd just like to thank Aaron Dabney, the owner of Waco Flight Training, you know, to present this for new CFIs and teaching with purpose. I think it's been a great conversation.